This podcast is part of Mishmash Media. Hey folks, Ivan here. Just letting you know that the following episode was recorded in the year 2020 for Patreon, and it was the first time we watched it. So some things we say may be a bit out of date. We hope you enjoy it anyhow. Hello.
Hello there.
Welcome to another episode of Curbcast. This is our Curb Your Enthusiasm review podcast, and we do get an episode each week in random order, and we talk about it scene by scene. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And this week we are doing episode 5 of season 2. We are halfway through season 2. We are talking about The Thong.
That's right. Not the thong that you want to see, especially on a middle-aged man.
Yeah, the therapist who loves showing off his skin.
Yeah, he must want an even 10. Before we get into the podcast, if you can hear some thumping in the background. That's my fault. My partner is doing a workout, but we couldn't record it any other time. So please excuse the random background thumps.
Yes, all good. We get a nice little soundtrack to go with it.
Yeah, it'll lend it an atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's jump into it, eh? So plot synopsis for The Thong. In this episode, Larry no longer feels comfortable going to his psychiatrist after he sees him wearing a thong at the beach. He is auctioned off for a Groats syndrome charity drive, and he has lunch with the winning bidder, which doesn't go as they intended.
Yeah, pretty simple storyline.
Yeah, very simple indeed. I mean, it's, because Groats disease is actually a fictional condition. I had to Google it. I thought it was a real thing. But I guess because with the condition, it's meant to be a nervous disorder where people are always, excited and on high alert and stuff. I don't think they wanted to insult anyone with a real disease. So that's probably why they made it up.
Yeah, it's a safe way to make a disease seem real without actually targeting a group of people. It's actually quite smart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad they kind of went with a fictional one, because I think they probably would have got a lot of complaints if it was like ADHD or autism.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound so unrealistic that you would think, oh, that's fake. You when you watch it, like, at no point did I think, oh, that's a fake disease. I just thought, oh, well, that just must be a disorder that is rare and I haven't heard of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it wasn't named after the Pittsburgh shortstop.
Yeah, not like Lou Gehrig's disease.
Not like Lou Gehrig's disease, no. And funny, actually, another bit of trivia I had about the episode, Steve. This is the first episode directed by Jeff Garlin. He plays Jeff on the show.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, so he made his directorial debut on the show.
Okay. It did feel a bit different to other episodes in that the storyline was a bit more simple. There was a lot less scenes. There was a lot less moving parts. Whether that's a coincidence or maybe that's just his directing style, I don't know.
Yeah, he was just probably trying to find his chops. I'm not sure about his directorial history before this one, so I don't know if he's directed anything before, but yeah, he's probably just wanted to have a go, see what happens.
I guess we'll find out. If he directs more episodes in the future, maybe, we'll notice a pattern if he does have a more simple style.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, special guests in this episode. Richard Lewis returns again as himself. Rob Reiner makes his debut on the show as himself as well. Tom McGowan, sorry, not Todd, plays John Tyler, the winning bidder for the lunch with Larry. John Pichette, he plays the therapist. And Rachel Snow plays John's daughter, Melanie Tyler, right at the end of the episode. So, scene one in The Thong. Larry is in his therapy session talking about the fact that he and his wife have very little in common. The therapist suggests that they go to the beach at Santa Barbara, saying that Cheryl would be very happy with it.
Yeah, it's strange seeing Larry, first, in therapy, and two, being so agreeable. I mean, he throws up a few problems saying, this wouldn't work, that wouldn't work, but he acquiesces to the suggestion pretty quickly.
Yeah, I know. I guess because it's established in a later scene that he's actually been going to him for a while. So, yeah, I was surprised too when he actually goes for therapy. I thought he'd be one of those people who thinks that he's normal and there's nothing wrong with him and he doesn't need a therapist. So he just goes along his merry way with his condition.
Yeah, and I would have thought maybe, I mean, if I was writing this episode, I would probably come from the position of like, well, he has to go to therapy, but he resents it. He's being forced to, maybe by Cheryl or by someone, as, a condition for whatever reason, like an ultimatum. But he seems to actually feel relaxed and okay with the therapy. So it was weird seeing him in that position.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the next scene, in the therapist's waiting room, he runs into Rob Reiner, who tells him about a charity drive for Groats syndrome, a condition that we'd mentioned before is fictional. Rob convinces Larry to be auctioned off to have lunch with the winning bidder, and he thinks that he should pull a big bid because of his success with Seinfeld, and Larry has the opposite idea. He thinks, I'm not going to get much money. You're going to get barely anything out of me. What is it? Opening bid, 50 cents.
Yeah, you can see the self-loathing coming coming through. You know, Rob's trying to be encouraging, saying, you know, it's a good cause and you'll get a lot of money, you'll raise a lot of money. And Larry's like, nah, you know, I think he's just trying to find a way to not do it.
Yeah, to try and get out of it, you know, because he's got no idea what growth syndrome is. And he's like, I got other things to do, man.
Yeah, and I think he just hates himself. Well, he does hate himself. So I think him saying that he won't get a lot of money is a genuine feeling he has.
No, well, at least he's aware of it.
Yeah.
Larry is in a public bathroom in the same building where his therapist leaves a cubicle and washes his hands. Larry tells him that the beach idea is a good one and that he'll do it, and the therapist ignores him and walks out. And I guess that kind of adds to the debate of when you are seeing a counselor or a psychiatrist or something, you know, you pay them by the hour or whatever your session is, and when time's up, time's up. But you think the therapist, you know, even though he's known Larry for many years and he's helped him, he won't even acknowledge what Larry says after outside the clock? Do you think that's a little bit, you know, a little bit shit? Or are you kind of in agreeance with, like, yeah, well, I'm not getting money for answering his questions, so why should I help him out?
But Larry's not asking for therapy. He's not asking for help. He's just adding a comment or mentioning something that they've already talked about.
That's
so
what I mean, yeah. I mean,
yeah, I think
the therapist isn't even giving him anything. He's giving him nothing.
Yeah, I mean, to expect the therapist to sit in a bathroom with him and go over it for 10 minutes about his decision, yeah, maybe a bit too far, but just an acknowledgement. That's just being polite, regardless of their professional relationship, just saying, oh, that's good, and you know, I'll talk to you about it next week when we're in session, and that's it. That's enough.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you got to do. Yeah, at least acknowledge, or we'll say, that's great, Larry. You know, I'm looking forward to hearing it next week.
The only thing I'm thinking, other than just rudeness, maybe I do know that some therapists have a really strict policy about zero interaction with their clients outside of the room, just to sort of keep it as professional as possible. I once went to a therapist who said, if we ever see each other in public, I'll react to how you act. So if you see me out and you come up and say hello, I'll respond. But if I see you and you ignore me, I'll just assume that you don't want, you know, people around you to know that I'm your therapist. So, you know, she said to me, I'll react based on what you do. So yeah, I mean, every therapist, I guess, has a different policy, but maybe his is absolutely zero acknowledgement, just for what, maybe he's had bad experiences. Maybe, you know, clients taken it too far. Don't know. Or maybe he's just a rude bastard, but either way, it was weird to see.
Yeah. I think he's probably, well, as we can see in a later scene, he loves to show off his body with that thong. So he's probably a bit, you know, he's got a bit of a superiority complex.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he's probably a bit arrogant.
Maybe. But after the office appointment, Larry asks Cheryl if she wants to go to Santa Barbara as per the therapist's advice, and she's very happy to do it. Cheryl lists a bunch of things that they need to get, like some block and a radio that they'll need for the day out.
Yeah, again, it was nice seeing Larry be, you know, a good person and just sort of saying, hey, I'm going to do something, even though I don't want to do it, I'm going to put myself out to make, you know, my wife or someone else happy. He's off to like a good, you know, like the first part of this episode, he's like being a good person.
Yeah.
It's a good Larry.
Yeah, good on you, Larry. And actually, you mentioned last week that Larry doesn't really do anything much for Cheryl, but I guess here we can see that he's doing it for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, usually, I mean, he's bought her jewelry before, but usually it's for a birthday or, you know, because he feels guilty, he has to make up. He rarely just sort of comes out of the blue and says, hey, let's do a thing because you like doing it.
Yeah, there's no just because.
Yeah, there's no agenda. It's just, you know, just maybe to make her happy, which is what, you know, you should do if you're in love with someone.
Exactly. Yes, always just becauses. They're all really nice.
Yeah.
And the next day they arrive at the beach and Cheryl carries some towels and walks towards the sand. Larry decides not to wear a bathing suit as he didn't want to sit in the car for an hour wearing one. He's stuck with carrying a large bunch of other items, and he slowly makes his way there while struggling to hold everything. How good is it when he's about to exit the car park and go onto the sand, where he drops, I think, his shirt or something, but he's able to like pick it up with, like, because he's holding like two chairs and an umbrella under his arms, and he's able to use like the leg of the chair to lift the shirt, and then the shirt kind of flies in the air for a second and then it drops on the chair.
Yeah, no, he's pretty handy with all the things he has to carry.
Yeah, it was just so well coordinated. I was like, oh wow, that's pretty good. I wonder how many takes it took to do that.
It could have been one of those freak things, you know, sometimes an actor does something on camera that wasn't planned and it just works out beautifully.
Yeah, maybe the idea was he was meant to drop it and then kind of sigh and then that's
yeah,
the scene, but he actually nailed it, maybe on the first take, and they're like, oh shit, okay, we'll keep that in.
I did like his joke as well about how the Jews are keeping the sunblock business, like the sunblock industry in business.
Eddie 75% of the song is bought by the Jews. Yeah, that's in the next part of the scene that I was about to mention once I hit the sand. Yeah, so yeah, they are. Larry's applying sunblock on his face, and he does mention that comment about the Jews owning all the sunblock and keeping him in business. They spot a man and a woman sitting on beach chairs in front of them facing the ocean, and Larry questions why people are so obsessed with the ocean. I mean, I enjoy looking at the ocean. I think it's quite nice. What about you?
I have a great affinity with the ocean. It's a bit cliched, but I feel very calm and at peace when I'm near water or in water. Half of my arm is tattooed with a bunch of nautical stuff. One, because I'm a hipster and I live in inner Melbourne, but also because I do have, I wouldn't say a spiritual affinity, but definitely a emotional affinity with water and the ocean. I find it very, yeah, it means a lot to me.
It does, yeah. I mean, you've been associated with the water a few times in your life. But did you have the anchor tattoo like Popeye?
No, not on my shoulder. I do have an anchor tattoo, but it's on my forearm.
Ah, right, okay, cool. Yeah. I think Popeye had it on his, what was it, his forearm or?
Either his forearm or his shoulder. I mean, that's the classic. Actually, I think it was on his forearm because he had massive forearms.
That's right, yeah. So you're Popeye.
Yeah, basically.
You just need you.
I don't have massive forearms, though. And I hate spinach, and I don't sound like I've got a stroke. So other than the tattoo, there's not much resemblance. And I don't smoke a pipe.
No, you don't smoke a pipe, no. Anyway, the man, as we mentioned before, he's sitting at the beach, and he gets up and he's revealed to be the therapist, and he's wearing, I guess it's a beach thong, I suppose. They're kind of like what Australians call speedos, so they're like beach underwear, I guess, whatever you call them, jockeys, or I don't know. But he's got like the thong on the back. He's showing his cheeks.
Yeah, it's just a thong version of a speedo, you know, like a swimming trunk.
Swimming trunk, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's just essentially what it is. And I guess it's probably he enjoys, he suggests to Larry to go to the beach. So obviously the therapist has a love for the beach as well and loves to show off a bit too much skin.
Well, a lot of people wear thongs to get an even tan so they don't get tan lines. So it could just be purely aesthetic. And a lot of people as well, you know, they like the feeling of a thong versus a brief. They enjoy it a bit more. So who knows? What I notice more, I mean, the thong and his butt and, you know, the color or the colors on the thong is obviously very noticeable. But stood out to me was the cut. It was so high. It reminded me of like 70s and 80s lingerie that women would wear where it was just like a really high cut.
Ah, yeah, with the high waistband.
Yeah. I mean, underwear like through the 90s and the early noughties kind of got lower. Like it went from like the high cut 80s underwear to like the more low cut, almost like, I think it was called the slut cut. Where it was like really low.
I never heard of that term before.
Yeah. You know, kind of when like low-rise jeans were popular in like the early 2000s, the underwear kind of matched that. But the thong was just really high. It looked like it was something out of like 1983 porn or something. It was very weird.
Very strange. Well, maybe he did buy them in the 80s.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's his like favorite thong. His, you know, his first thong.
Yeah, his first one. And he's, you know, he's kept it really well.
Mm.
Obviously, Larry, he's very embarrassed by this and he hides under, you know, near Cheryl, hides under his towel.
He ducks down really quickly and then hides under his towel.
That's right, so he can't be seen. And he wonders if he should tell one of his other patients, Richard Lewis, about this.
Yeah, and he also makes the decision pretty quickly that he can't see him as a therapist anymore because he can't take him seriously.
Exactly. Once you see them in a thong, that's it.
Yeah, I could kind of understand that, you know, because a therapist-patient relationship is one based on respect and trust. And not that a thong makes him any less qualified to do his job, but I can understand going to the next session and struggling to see past the thong and listening to what it's saying.
I mean, how would you feel if you had, you know, a psychologist or someone who you see, you know, like a doctor or any kind of medical professional, or not even, maybe just someone you've met or someone you know, and you see them wearing that compromising outfit? What would you think of them?
Oh, look, I'm not very prudish or uptight about that sort of thing. I'd just put them in the context of like when they're outside the office, they're able to do and wear and be whoever they want to be, you know? So as long as they're maintaining the professionalism that I'm paying them for within the hour or whatever I'm allocated, that's okay. I mean, it's not something I could put out of my mind completely, but it wouldn't undermine, you know, the relationship I had with them. If it was only thong underwear on a beach, I'd find it more humorous than bothersome.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'd probably just have a private giggle about it and you know, tell my friends that I saw my therapist in a weird high cut multicolored thong. But you know, if he's a good therapist, he's a good therapist. I can separate the two. What about you?
Oh yeah, I'd be the same. I mean, actually, yeah. Funny story, when I was in grade 6 or 7, we had a teacher in school. And what would happen is, like, we had like two or three teachers and they'd rotate. Like, it was a weird kind of system. It was like three classes put together. And like the teachers would rotate for like a third of the day. Anyway, and one of the teachers who I won't mention their names, of course. But one time we drove along the beach and the teacher was, he was a male teacher and he was on the beach and he was in his underwear, but we had like a tent set up with his four-wheel drive. And I was like, "Hey, Mr. You know who, how you doing?" And he looked at me and he was all shocked. He was like, "Oh, hello, Ivan." And he put his towel on. So I think he was doing some sunbaking as well.
Yeah, he probably, I think any teacher probably gets a bit sheepish if they see one of their students in public.
Yeah. It was funny. It was just like, "Oh, is that you? Oh yeah, that is you, mister."
Yeah, it's always weird when you're in school, seeing your teachers outside of school, seeing them in a different context. I remember when I was 18 and I started going out a lot. This is back in Brisbane, you know, in a place in Brisbane called The Valley, which is like the main nightlife area. I used to go there every weekend. And maybe a month after I turned 18, I went out and I saw one of my high school teachers. And she was absolutely wasted. You know, she was maybe 30, maybe 32. So, you know, still within the normal age range of going out and doing that. But it was just so strange seeing her in that context. And I can't remember if we talked or if I just saw her sort of, you know, like from afar. But I had to sort of I was thinking about it the next day and had to tell myself, like, you know, outside of the schoolroom, she's a normal human being who goes out and parties and does normal things. Like, you got to recontextualize people outside of what you expect of them. So that's kind of how I would see the thong situation if it happened to me, of like, it would be a process, but you kind of have to do that. Otherwise, you know, you got to humanize them.
Yeah. I mean, people have lives at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Different things. So yeah, you just go with it.
Yeah. But I can understand why Larry, being the way he is, can't get past that. For him, it's a massive deal, not just something you go, "Huh, that's weird and funny."
In the next scene, Larry is at Richard's house and he tells him about what happened. Richard is shocked as he says that he needs to terminate his therapy with him. He laments the fact that he'll have to recap his life to another therapist. And when he means recap, he means tell his life story to another therapist. And he claims this one is his 28th therapist since 1969.
Well, Richard, as the show goes on, you learn more and more about Richard. You know, he sort of pops in here and there in episodes, but there's always a mention of like his former drug abuse, his former alcoholism, you know, and this just adds to what seems to be a long period. Well, probably most of his adult life, you know, he's just sort of been, you know, abusing himself. You know, it doesn't sound like he's had a very healthy life.
No, he's gone through a lot. Yeah.
For sure.
He offers to take Larry to lunch to set up a game plan to decide what the best way of getting out of therapy is. But Larry says that he's got a lunch with the winning bidder for Groats.
It almost seems like a Larry thing, where Larry would be like, "I need to have a lunch meeting with you to figure out a plan." But Larry's like, "My mind's already made up. I don't need to have lunch to figure this out. We're cancelling. That's it."
Oh, no. But he already had the lunch with the Groats bidder at the same time.
Yeah, but Larry also says, like, even if he didn't have lunch with the Groats guy, he wasn't keen on it anyway. He didn't think it was necessary.
Actually, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true. He's like, why should we do it? Just go in and say what it is.
Yeah, but for me, like, I would expect Larry to be the one that would need a game plan to just cancel a therapist, which isn't that hard of a thing to do. Again, Rachel.
I don't know. No idea. Richard.
Richard. No, I was going to say Larry, again, sort of he's going against his normal self, you know, in this episode. Like, at the start, he was very nice. In this scene, he's very decisive. You know, a different angles of Larry.
Mm, definitely. And we see plenty of angles in the next scene. So Larry arrives at the restaurant to have lunch with the winner. And this is probably my favorite scene in the whole episode.
Yeah, he's very good.
Very, very good. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty, pretty good.
Pretty good.
He says that later on. He introduces himself as John Tyler, the winner, and Larry remarks that's the same name as a US president. And I checked who John Tyler was. He was actually the 10th president of the United States.
Okay, he's one of those random presidents that you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, one that from like 1850 to like 1860 or something.
Yeah.
One of those presidents, yeah.
The only president I know from that period of like Civil War history of like period of America is Chester A. Arthur Field. And I only know that because he's mentioned in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh, nice. Chester A. Arthur Field. Nice. I mean, I think Abe Lincoln, George Washington.
Oh, yeah, Jefferson. Abe Lincoln. Of course, he was the president during the Civil War. But, you know, I mean.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson. Wasn't Eisenhower, wasn't he president? No.
He was president in the early 20th century. And right. Thomas Jefferson was, I think, the second president or third. He was like the late 18th century. I'm talking like the mid 1800s. Oh, it seems to be like this. Other than Lincoln, I don't think many people, probably even Americans, and if you're American, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be like the least memorable period of American presidents, bar a couple.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I can't think of any other than Abe in that era.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Larry goes, as you see in this scene, Larry goes on one of his long-winded rants about things like presidents, to offering to donate his organs for groats, to playing happy birthday with a fork and a set of salt and pepper shakers. You know, he just goes on all these random rants about everything. And John, people say don't meet your idols, but John wants to meet his idol, but then he thinks it's totally different to what he expected.
Yeah, he would definitely regret it after this. He probably still appreciates the fact that Larry was nice enough to donate his time and $4,000 is going to the charity, but I definitely think he would have been disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see it on his face too. He was just like...
He's so uncomfortable throughout the whole time. He seems like a very sort of awkward man anyway. I feel like he would have been uncomfortable and awkward regardless. Even if Larry wasn't being a weirdo and he was just being normal, I feel like he would have been awkward anyway. He seemed very like sheepish and kind of just not sure of what to say or do.
Yeah, when he walked in, he was like, oh, Mr. David.
Yeah. Even if Larry was calm and normal and just talked about regular things, I think he still would have been awkward, just maybe a bit less awkward.
A bit less awkward, yeah. But one other thing that Larry tells John about the thong story, which comes back to get him a bit later. John is very troubled by Larry's behavior, as we mentioned before. Larry asks if he can start eating as John's meal will arrive in a few minutes. So Larry's meal arrives a bit earlier. John asks that he wait so they can eat together, and Larry questions him about it because he's very annoyed.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the etiquette here, and I kind of remember being in a situation where I felt obliged to either start eating or wait for my food, you know, for the other person to eat. So I don't know. I guess it's a personal choice with the etiquette here, but I'm kind of on Larry's side in this situation of like having lunch together doesn't mean we have to start eating our meal at exactly the same time. Yeah, I mean, and the waiter said it's going to be a couple of minutes. Larry's still going to be eating most of his food by the time his food arrives. I don't know. I think he's being a bit precious.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I kind of agree. I mean, it depends. I mean, if you and I went to dinner or lunch, you know, yep. I'm a fast eater. So if my meal came out first, I'd be like, actually, I know I'm a fast eater. I'd probably smash 3/4 of my food before yours arrived. Yep. I think I'll wait.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong. If you think it's a polite thing to do, by all means, wait. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But to expect other people to wait, I think is a bit rich, especially when you know it's only going to be a couple of minutes. If the waiter said, oh, look, there's been a delay. It's going to be half an hour more. I'm really sorry. You're like, yeah, eat. But if it's going to be a couple of minutes, just let him eat. It's all good.
Yeah. If it was the other way around and you had your meal first, I'd tell you to start eating.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the next scene, Larry meets Rob outside of the therapist's office. Rob asks Larry why he was being strange around John during the lunch and why he didn't read the material about groats that Rob sent him, because Larry claims that groats was named after a baseball player, a Pittsburgh Pirates shortstop named Dick Groat. And that annoys Rob very much.
Yeah, and he tries to justify his theory by saying that Lou Gehrig's disease is named after Lou Gehrig, who was a baseball player.
He was, indeed, played for the Yankees. And Rob asks him if he can MC a talent show at a middle school so John can pay his $4,000 check to the charity, because John was, you know, considering not even paying the money at all after the incident.
Yeah, Larry just tries to buy his way out.
Buy his way out, indeed. Scene 9, Larry is with the therapist and he tries to amicably break off the relationship, quote-unquote. He tells them that he had an epiphany while shopping with Cheryl and that things are now in perspective. The therapist says that Larry seems very agitated and he asks if it has anything to do with him wearing a thong at the beach, and we can assume that, you know, Larry told John the story and John probably told Rob and then Rob probably told the therapist.
Yeah, I was thinking either he heard it through the grapevine or maybe he saw Larry there, but Larry didn't know that he saw him.
Maybe. Because
Maybe he just put that in his head. He's like, oh, Larry saw me at the beach with a thong. Larry's very uptight. Maybe this makes him not want to see me anymore. Or he heard it through. Either way.
Heard it through Rob via John.
Yeah.
Yeah. After the appointment, Larry meets with Richard outside of the office and says that the therapist is on to them about the thong. He suspects that John told Rob who told the therapist, as Larry told John about it at lunch, as we hypothesized before. Richard says that he was going to use Larry's plan that he tried, but now has to come up with something else. I'm miserable, suicidal, I want to quit. they pretend to talk about something else as the therapist greets Richard and Larry walks off as Richard walks into the office.
Yeah.
And in the final scene, Larry is emceeing the talent show and he introduces John's daughter, Melissa, to perform a recital. And, I didn't mention that in the previous scene, the one with John and Larry at lunch, John says that his daughter suffers from groats as well.
Yeah, so they sort of set up the final scene here.
Indeed. So Melissa, John's daughter, begins to perform Beethoven's Für Elise on the piano before her groats kicks in and she ramps up the tempo to the point of starting to play uncontrollably. You know, it's really awkward for everyone involved. Larry goes back on stage to try and remove her before she punches him in the face. And the episode ends with Melissa lying on Larry trying to hit him as he is helpless and lying on the ground. And then the music kicks in.
Yeah, it was strange how Larry just took it upon himself to just walk out and pull her off the piano.
I thought it would have ended with her just still playing and then, you know, there's like a pan shot of Larry backstage wondering what the hell's going on, and then it just cuts.
Yeah, and when he was on stage introducing, sorry, what was her name?
Melissa Tyler.
I was expecting him to put his foot in it to say something awkward and the crowd to just react with silence or crickets.
I thought so too, yeah.
But he was actually quite charming. He's a really good host.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he wasn't bad. He had a few jokes in there.
Actually, yeah, he made the jokes. Yeah, he made the joke about, you know, the next benefit being for bald people and, like, watch out, bald people, and, you know, got a few laughs. Yeah, he was actually, like, a really, really good host.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think he was going, because I could tell he went a bit too far with the bald jokes, because you could see, I think it was Rob Reiner or the guy next to him was kind of like, you know, when Larry kept going with the bald jokes, he that was like, oh, come on, Larry,
you know. Yeah, 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 get on with it. I think Rob was like, hurry up. Yeah, we're not talking about bald people. We're talking about
a serious disease. Great. Anyway.
he should have said, where do you get the nerve?
Where do you get the nerve, indeed. Anyway, so that is The Thong, Season 2, Episode 5. Now, Stephen, out of 5 Larrys, what do you rate this episode?
I'm going to give this 2 multicolored thongs. Out of 5.
Okay. 2.5 Larrys out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, look, probably my least favorite episode we've done so far in Season 1 and 2. He laughs. I really did like the scene when he's at lunch with Joe. Just his ramblings were hilarious, and the fact that he just uses it as an opportunity to ask about what he should do, you know, with his therapist and the thong. And, you know, just that scene was funny. And the thong itself was a pretty cool, like, little plot device. But overall, a pretty forgettable episode, and I didn't really enjoy it that much.
Well, it was Jeff Garlin's first directorial effort, but hopefully when we see the next one with him, hopefully it's a bit better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a write-off of an episode, but just probably my least favourite and the least memorable so far.
Yeah, same for me. Yeah, it's not one that I'll really remember too much when we keep coming with this. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you do enjoy it. And if you do want to reach out to us, all of our social media details and contact information are in the show notes. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And we will see you next week for another episode of Curbcast Season 2, Episode 6. You take care.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Mishmash Media, an independent podcast network. Follow us on social media at Mishmash Media AU or support us on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes.